Today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Certainly an unusual album to put out in 1983.
Hey there, it's Jim Lenihan here on Rockin' the Suburbs. We have guest hosts this week. We have had all this week. Today is Friday, the end of the first half of the punk series, but these guys are going to keep going next week as well. The guys I'm talking about are guest hosts Paul Hayden and Vasanth Ramamurthy. And today they're going to talk about Northern California punk. All right, take it away, guys.
We're going to move on to the early 80s, San Francisco Bay Area. And so you're going to start us off.
Yep.
What's your choice?
I am going with a band called Fang, and the album is called Landshark. This was released in 1983. Fang was a little bit slower and sludgier than your average punk band, which I think your next pick will also display. They're also sort of more darker and nihilistic side of things. The most famous song was called "The Money Will Roll Right In," which was covered by Nirvana, Mudhoney, and Metallica as well. So kind of gives you an idea of who they influenced. Personally, I do enjoy the sort of slower, gnarlier side of punk. So Fang is definitely an influence on that kind of stuff. The kind of punk rock that sort of gets into like noise rock and you know, the My War influence and all that kind of thing. So this is right in line with that, I would say. So yeah, Fang Landshark is the pick.
Yeah, I think when you mentioned, we were talking before, The Money Will Roll, or you mentioned Nirvana covered them. I'm like, okay, it's been a while since I, you know, dug into my Nirvana B-side stuff. But then I'm like, I played the Fang record, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I know this one. And it totally here where, especially like the Bleach era, yep, of Nirvana, you can totally hear that. And Fang, they were really grooving on that sound, and certainly an unusual album to put out in 1983. But again, that's what punk rock was about. This is what we like, you know. It's the other thing to keep in mind is, you know, this is the early 80s. We're not that far removed from kind of the classic rock, or, you know, the hard rock of the 70s. So, you know, if you're in your 20s, you've probably listen to that, or maybe you had siblings who were playing it. I mean, it was what you heard back then. So sometimes it can't help but to become part of your DNA and come out in whatever music you come up with. So in hindsight, it seems kind of strange to kind of like be surprised that someone wants to combine metal with punk, because I mean I was kind of the same way. I mean, I like all those, Aerosmith, Zeppelin, Kiss. I listened to all that stuff, and to me, the music of punk was just an extension of that. But anyway, I digress. Let's go to my choice from this era. It is Flipper. The album is either called Generic Album or Generic Album, Generic Flipper, but it's got, in terms of album covers, another pretty iconic one, just a yellow cover with really generic text on it. In true punk fashion, as the music got faster, Flipper chose to slow it down, and they slowed it way down. At the time, it felt inevitable that a band would eventually, refuse to conform to the rigid standards of hardcore. And they were slow, but the lyrics were sometimes hopeful, but often depressing. As I gave it another listen, I noticed that clearly tuning their instruments was not a priority with them. I think the first song is just like, okay, did you guys even do anything ever? And did you even try to tune in for this? I mean, you're recording an album, but somehow just one of those albums that it just worked. The songs hang together. Probably, if there is a song that people know by Flipper, it's probably Sex Bomb. What I call 8 minutes and seven total words in the lyrics. So I was doing all the research on this, and there was a critic who described it as the closest 80s punks got to their own Louie Louie. And we can, and you had already mentioned the Seattle bands, but my notes say, we can discuss bands that were influenced by them, and I've got the Melvins and Nirvana, and I'm sure it doesn't stop there. These guys were just, they were doing their own thing, and Patrick had mentioned in an earlier correspondence he got a chance to see him, which was like, oh, that would have been awesome. And he said it was about what you would expect. A little bit of confrontation here. But it's one of those. And they, after this album, I think they might have done one more.
Yeah, there's one, at least one or two more.
But you know, it's again, it's one of those where they just seem to everything just seemed to come together on this one.
Right.
And they had some good singles too, but definitely very influential. And I think, excuse me, the two, you know, Flipper and Fang certainly probably didn't sell a whole lot of records in their time, but I bet they sold quite a few more since since then.
Yeah. Definitely not the most popular at the time, but you can, if you listen hard, you can hear their influence, especially in the 90s bands.
Do you want to talk about some honorable mentions here? Sorry.
Yeah, of course, the Bay Area, you can't go without mentioning the Dead Kennedys. Started around, 79, 80, I think is when Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables came out. So that's a key album. Of course, Holiday in Cambodia, and what's the other songs on there? Let's Lynch the Landlord, and stuff like that. So
Kill,
yeah, Dead,
yeah.
yeah, Kill the Poor,
Kill
right?
the
Yeah,
poor, yep.
yep, yep. So that one, and then the other one is the Avengers, which was a band with a female lead singer, Penelope Houston. This one's called the Pink Album because it has a very sort of pinkish album cover to it. So yeah, another pretty good Bay Area band. But yeah, what are your thoughts on these?
Dead Kennedys for sure. They were very, very important. They were the name that, well, from what I remember, is they were kind of the punchline. If someone had heard a little bit about punk, they would just say, "Oh yeah, they'd talk about the Dead Kennedys, how ridiculous a name it is." But they did have, I mean, they were popular. I mean, they sold records. They were good records. Another example of a local label, Alternative Tentacles, getting their stuff out, getting distributed. They had some good singles, Police Truck, as you mentioned, Holiday in Cambodia, probably their strongest song. And then, the album after, and what was that one? Plastic Surgery Disasters.
Right.
Is no, it's no slouch.
Yeah.
It's very similar to some of the other ones we've talked about, where there's a half of the old fast stuff, and then they kind of branch out on the second part. So I think they all collectively, it seemed like the bands kind of realized that you can only take the kind of the hardcore, the basic sound so far. And even if you look back to, the Jam and the Clash, I mean, they did a couple records that were like that, but then they just went off in completely different directions. And to their credit, I mean, that's where their heads were at, and then they made some great records out of it. So, interesting how hindsight is always helpful in terms of, trying to understand what these guys were doing, whereas back in the day, you just couldn't believe that they would change their sound that drastically. It was like a betrayal or something, but we're all past that now.
All right, and that is the end of part five of the punk series. It's Rockin' the Suburbs, and tune in again on Monday. That's next week.